Have you ever watched two pilots try to outdo each other in the pattern? Maybe one greases it, and the other comes around tighter, a little lower, pushing just a hair past what's smart. Now multiply that by two superpowers, 100,000 spectators, and the fastest passenger airplanes ever built. I'm Tail Dragger, and you're listening to The Hangar on Radio Hangar. Pull up a chair because this one still gives me chills. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo private pilot instrument rating all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. So let's set the scene. It's June 3, 1973, Le Bourget Airport, just north of Paris, the same field where Lindbergh landed 46 years earlier. Le Bourget was hosting the 30th Paris Air Show. And in 1973, every defense ministry, every airline executive, and every aviation journalist on the planet wanted to be there. Because this was the year both supersonic transports would fly. The Anglo-French Concorde and the Soviet Tupolev Tu-144 side by side in front of the world. Now, you have to understand what was happening in the early 70s. The space race had cooled off, Apollo was winding down, but the supersonic transport race was white hot. The Americans had already dropped out. Congress killed the Boeing 2707 SST program in 1971, so it came down to two airplanes and two ideologies. The West had Concorde, beautiful, elegant, a decade of joint British and French engineering. The Soviets had the Tu-144. Western press called it Concordsky, and the Soviets hated that name. They insisted their airplane came first, and technically it did. The Tu-144 made its maiden flight on December 31, 1968. Concorde didn't fly until March of 69, 2 months later. But here's the thing. Every pilot in the room already suspects. First doesn't always mean best. The Tu-144 looked like Concorde the way a kit car looks like a Ferrari. Same general shape. Sure. Long drooping nose, delta wings, four engines under the rear fuselage. But the engineering underneath was rougher. The Soviets had been playing catch-up in materials, in aerodynamics, in systems integration. There were persistent rumors, never fully proven, but widely believed, that Soviet intelligence had stolen Concorde's blueprints. The French counterintelligence service, the DST, had actually arrested a Soviet spy named Sergei Pavlov in 1965 for running agents inside the French aerospace industry. Whether stolen plans helped or not, the Tu-144 had problems. Concorde didn't. It was louder, it burned more fuel, and it was harder to handle at low speeds, which is why the Soviets added small canard wings near the nose that Concorde never needed. So here we are at Le Bourget, June 3rd. It's a Sunday, the public day. Families, kids, aviation fans packed along the flight line. Estimates put the crowd at around 200,000 people. Concorde flew its demonstration earlier in the afternoon. Test pilot Jean Franchi put on a gorgeous display. Smooth, precise, the airplane singing at low altitude. The crowd loved it. Concorde looked like the future, then it was the Soviet crew's turn. The Tu-144 was being flown by Captain Mikhail Kozlov, experienced test pilot well-respected. His co-pilot was Valery Molchanov, and they had flight engineer Anatoly Benderov and three other crew members aboard, six souls total. There was also a passenger in the cabin, General Vladimir Benderov, no relation to the engineer, from the Soviet aerospace establishment. Some accounts say there was a senior Tupolev engineer as well. The point is, this was not just a flight demonstration, this was a political event. The crew knew the world was watching, and they knew Concorde had just looked magnificent. Now, here's where it gets interesting, and here's where the story gets debated to this day. Kozlov began the flying display. The Tu-144 came down the runway, rotated and climbed out. It was loud. That was one thing everyone at Le Bourget agreed on. The Tu-144 was significantly louder than Concorde. Kozlov flew a pass, then set up for a maneuver that would show off the airplane's low-speed handling. He brought the nose up, extended those canard foreplanes, and began a slow pass with the landing gear coming down. And then something went wrong. There are two versions of what happened next, and the truth probably sits somewhere between them. The French version, which came out of the official investigation, pointed to a French Mirage fighter jet. A Dassault Mirage 3R reconnaissance aircraft had been sent up, some say by French intelligence, to photograph the Tu-144 during its display. The idea was to get close-up images of the canard mechanisms and other design features. Whether the Soviet crew saw this Mirage and reacted to it is one of the great unanswered questions of aviation history. What we know for certain is that Kozlov pushed the airplane into a steep dive. Some witnesses said it looked like an evasive maneuver. Others said it looked like a botched recovery from a climb that had gotten too slow. The airplane pitched over hard, nose down, and Kozlov pulled back to recover. He pulled too hard, the airplane exceeded its structural limits. Somewhere around negative 3 Gs in the pullout, the left wing failed. Parts of the airplane began separating. The Tu-144 broke apart in midair over the town of Goussainville, just northeast of the airfield. 6 crew members died. On the ground, the wreckage destroyed 15 houses and killed 8 people, including 3 children. 60 others were injured. It was, at that time, the deadliest air show disaster in history. I want you to sit with that for a moment. 200,000 people watched an airplane come apart over a town full of families on a Sunday afternoon. The aftermath was chaos, and not just on the ground. Diplomatically, this was a nightmare. The French and Soviet governments both had reasons to control the narrative. The Soviets did not want their supersonic flagship to be seen as flawed. The French did not want to admit they'd sent a military reconnaissance jet into an active airshow demonstration pattern. The official investigation was a joint French-Soviet affair, and it was widely criticized for being incomplete. The final report cited pilot error. It said Kozlov had made an abrupt maneuver to avoid a collision or a perceived collision, then overcorrected. The Mirage was mentioned, but its role was left deliberately vague. The Soviet delegation packed up what was left of the Tu-144 and took the wreckage home. The French sealed parts of the investigation for decades. It wasn't until the late 1990s and early 2000s that researchers and journalists, including a BBC documentary team, dug deeper into the Mirage angle and the pressure the crew had been under. And that's what I want to talk about. The pressure, think about it, from Kozlov's seat. You're a test pilot, yes, but you're also a representative of the Soviet state. You've just watched your Western rival put on a flawless show. Your airplane is louder, less refined, and everyone in the crowd knows it. You've got a general sitting in the cabin behind you. You've got the Tupolev Design Bureau's reputation riding on this flight, and you may or may not have briefed on what maneuvers you'd fly, because some accounts suggest the crew deviated from their planned profile to put on a more impressive show after seeing Concorde's demonstration. Now here's where it gets interesting for any pilot listening to this. Every single one of us has felt some version of that pressure. Maybe not at the Paris air show with the Cold War riding on your shoulders, but at the local fly-in with your buddy watching from the ramp. On the go-around, you didn't execute because you didn't want to look like you couldn't hack it. On the approach, you continued when the smart play was to divert. Pressure to perform is the invisible G-force. It bends your judgment before you feel it bending. Bob Hoover, rest his soul, used to say that good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from bad judgment. But Kozlov never got to learn from this one. None of his crew did. The Tu-144 program limped on after Le Bourget. The Soviets eventually put it into limited passenger service in 1977, 4 years after the crash, but it only served 2 routes, Moscow to Alma-Ata, which is now Almaty in Kazakhstan, and a mail run. The airplane was unreliable. Aeroflot pulled it from passenger service in 1978 after another Tu-144, a different airframe, crashed during a test flight near Moscow, 55 flights carrying passengers. That was the entire commercial career of the Soviet supersonic transport. Concorde, by contrast, flew for 27 years. From 1976 to 2003, it wasn't perfect either. The Air France crash at Gonesse in 2000 proved that. But Concorde earned its place in history as a machine that worked, that carried passengers reliably, at twice the speed of sound for nearly 3 decades. Now, I've flown into Le Bourget for the Paris show myself, back when I was still in the left seat of the heavy iron. You taxi past the museum, and if you look carefully, you can see a Concorde sitting in the collection. Gorgeous thing. There's no Tu-144 at Le Bourget. There are a few survivors in Russian museums. One sits at the Monino Air Force Museum outside Moscow. Another is at a technical university in Samara. Monuments to a program that tried to match the West by copying its shape without fully mastering its substance. But I don't tell this story to mock the Soviets. Their test pilots were brave. Their engineers were talented people working within a system that demanded results on political timelines, not engineering ones. Kozlov and his crew died because the pressures around that airplane, political, competitive, institutional, overwhelmed the safety margins that should have protected them. That's a lesson that doesn't belong to any one country or any one era. Every June, when the Paris Air Show rolls around, I think about Goussainville. I think about those houses, I think about the families who were just living their Sunday and never heard the airplane coming apart above them. And I think about a crew that climbed into a cockpit knowing the whole world was watching and feeling the weight of that in every control input. Air shows are magnificent. I love them more than almost anything in aviation. But the line between magnificent and catastrophic is thinner than we like to admit. And it's drawn by the decisions pilots make under pressure, Most of this comes from the French Bureau of Enquiry and Analysis Archives, the BBC documentary Concordski from 2000, and a detailed account in Bill Gunston's book on the Tupolev Tu-144. Good reading for a rainy day in the hangar. More at radiohangar.com. Fly safe out there.